It's always a pleasure to welcome Dr. Robert Hockett, professor of law at Cornell University. Good morning to you.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Thanks for being with us again today.
Sure.
We had the group of 20 getting together. Promises were made. The dollar is down. Give us your review of that event and if you think these people are going to keep their promises not to have a currency war.
Right. Okay. So there are actually a couple of important things that are going to come out of the G20 meeting, but one of them is certainly what you were talking about, the need to sort of arrive at some kind of new set of currency arrangements, right? So the problem of late, as a lot of people know, is that the dollar has been thought by some to be being kept sort of artificially high in its value relative to the currencies of certain other nations, notably China, but also a number of other export-led growth countries, as we call them now. Now, the problem with this is basically that there are sort of two different interpretations that one can put on efforts that a country makes to keep its own currency low, or efforts that a country takes that might look like they are efforts to keep its currency low. What one has to focus on first is how that's done, right? So a country like China purchases lots of U.S. dollar-denominated financial instruments out there in global markets, and indeed purchases dollars themselves, right, as foreign exchange. Now, that, of course, puts more demand on the dollar. If it's buying the dollar with its own national currency, then, of course, the dollar in particular rises in value or is maintains value relative, say, to the Chinese national currency. Now, the two interpretations that you can put on something like that are as follows, right? One is the sort of cynical or sort of suspicious one, which is that this is actually an effort to make sure that the dollar stays high in order to keep, say, Chinese exports attractive to American buyers, and then that, you know, keeps deficits, American trade deficits, large and indeed growing. But there's also a more innocent explanation that can be offered in some of these cases, right, or a couple of more innocent explanations. One is that a lot of people forget that about 10 years ago, in the late 1990s and up to about 2000, a lot of countries in East Asia in particular were burned very badly by sudden changes in relative currency values, right? Sudden changes in the values of their own currencies relative to the dollar. And in order to maintain the values of their own currencies and to keep them from suddenly plummeting, it would have been very helpful for them to have large foreign exchange reserves, notably dollars, that they could have used then to purchase their own currencies on the open markets to support them, right, to keep their values up. And so many countries were burned about 10 years ago that, in effect, what we have going on now, I think, in some of them is a kind of self-insurance, right, where they try to mass up dollar foreign exchange reserves as a kind of reserve that they can use, right, to maintain the value of their own currencies if there were suddenly some speculative run on them. Another sort of related innocent explanation would be that some countries try to keep the value of the dollar high, in essence, because what they're really trying to do is render their own currencies a little bit less attractive to foreign speculators in order to keep capital, prevent capital from sort of flooding into their countries and creating or giving rise to a kind of speculative asset price bubble within their own countries of the kind that happened here, right? Now, I myself tend to prefer more innocent explanations if they're at all, you know, plausible, and I think that they are plausible here. But the fact remains, you know, even if we sort of fall back on or rely on the innocent explanation, that some kind of common agreement has to be arrived at to ensure that one doesn't, you know, harm others in assisting oneself. And so you need a kind of cooperative effort and sort of you have to have various financial officials working from the same page. And I think that's what they're finally trying to work out over at the G20 right now. And I'm a sort of Pollyanna, I suppose, but I'm kind of optimistic that they're going to work something out.
Well, that's good because I'm a total cynic myself, but
good. So we've got harmony and balance in the gang, right?
Exactly. Yeah. What about new banking regulations that might be taking place on a global scale?
Oh, this is absolutely fascinating. So so some people have perhaps heard of the Basel Committee, also known as the Basel Committee, depending on whether you prefer the French or the German pronunciation of the name of the city in Switzerland where this committee meets. But essentially, this is a committee of the world's top central bankers, right? So officials from the Fed, the Bank of England, People's Bank of China, European Central Bank, and so forth, meet every 2 months in Switzerland to talk about common problems that face the world's central banks and the world's financial system and the various national financial systems, and try to arrive at sort of common solutions or agreeable solutions that all of them can adopt, because it's important that everybody be more or less on the same page when it comes to bank regulation, too. The best-known standards that emerge from these Ball Committee meetings are the so-called capital accords. And what these are is agreements pursuant to which central banks arrive at a common set of understandings as to what kind of capital requirements, what kind of buffer stock requirements they should place upon their own domestic banks in order to limit the growth of credit and thus in order to keep asset price bubbles from getting too large. The Ball I standards were arrived at in 1988 and were widely acknowledged to be a success. The Ball II standards were much more problematic and never were really fully worked out, but essentially that process took place over the early 2000s. It's largely thought that because there wasn't, you know, sort of unanimity on what those standards should be, Ball II standards back in the early 2000s, that might have played some role right in the crisis that we've not too long ago had occur. So the Ball Committee has arrived at a so-called Ball III set of standards that all seem to agree on and that are fairly simple in their administrability. They can be administered quite simply. And those are to be formally ratified at the G20 meeting in November. And I find them very exciting for a couple of reasons. First of all, they require that more capital be held on hand, and I think that's long overdue. And secondly, maybe even more importantly, they finally recognize formally the need for something I like to call countercyclical capital regulation, which is to say you tighten up on the standards when you've got a bubble or a boom underway, and then you loosen them up when you're in a time of slump, like right now. So you recognize finally, formally, that the central bank's role, among other things, is to sort of lean against the wind, as William McChesney Martin, a great Fed chair, once put it.
Dr. Hockett, there are politicians running saying it is our platform to repeal these financial regulations if we are elected. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's just crazy. I'll be quite frank about it. First of all, I think that Dodd-Frank itself is to be celebrated for its own sort of tentative steps.
That's the new financial regulation that our Congress passed and was put into law.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the new Dodd-Frank legislation that was passed or signed into law this past summer, I think is itself terrifically important in formally recognizing the existence of systemic risk throughout the financial system and recognizing the need to create a so-called systemic risk council that comprises all of the principal financial regulators to look over the system as a whole, to look at the forest rather than individual groves or trees.
Dr. Hockett, I'm always embarrassed about this. We never have enough time with you.
I'm too long-winded.
No, you're great. I love talking with you, and I hope to talk with you again soon. Dr. Robert Hockett, professor of law at Cornell University. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Look forward to it.